were protests all over the country, including those protesting around Israel's war on Gaza and U.S. support for that war. Thousands marched in Washington in a separate protest outside the hands-off protest, and many joined the hands-off protest who felt this way. What do you think of the U.S. role and what the U.S. can do as Netanyahu meets with Trump?
The U.S. has been complicit, and it's been Israel's largest supplier. This isn't just an Israeli genocide against Palestinians. This is a U.S.-backed Israeli genocide against Palestinians. And the important part of this is that if you look at who makes up the Palestinian people, particularly in Gaza, more than 50% are children. More than 50% are under the age of 18. And when people talk about genocide, I think the element that is largely ignored is that we're not just talking about the number of people who are killed or the number of people who are injured. It's about the specific intent to try to kill off a group of people. When you deny them health care, when you deny them the ability to have access to medicine, as we're seeing with the polio vaccine, as we're seeing with the bombing of all 36 hospitals in the Gaza Strip, you can see the specific intent to commit and carry out genocide, to eliminate an entire group. And it's now the children who are in Israel's target. They're the ones who are in Israel's crosshairs, as they always have been. The things that can be specifically done are to make sure that that weapons supply does not make it to Israel. Without U.S. weaponry, the Israeli army cannot continue its attack on Gaza to this same extent. We also have to be pushing to make sure that Israel is ostracized and that the international mechanisms are in place to make sure that people are held to account. Without this, we can just see that what the next steps are going to be. And Netanyahu has made it clear. He wants to get rid of Palestinians. He's made it clear that he wants to see ethnic cleansing, and he's made it clear that he wants to see genocide. And it's up to us to be doing everything to stop it.
So we only have a minute, but I wanted to ask you about this last question. Netanyahu went to Hungary to meet with Orban, and so Hungary pulled out of the International Criminal Court so it wouldn't have to arrest him. There's an ICC warrant for him for war crimes and crimes against humanity. When Netanyahu flew from Hungary to the United States, he took a longer than usual flight path to avoid flying over countries, including Ireland and Iceland, that might enforce an arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court if the plane had to make an emergency landing. The significance of this.
The significance of this is that the places in which Netanyahu is able to go are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And it's just a question of time before we begin to see a global alliance to make sure that this war criminal is held to account. He's made it clear that he wants to inflict genocide. He's made the policies of starvation clearer. There's been nothing entering Gaza since March the 2nd. And this space for him to be able to travel is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. I believe it's just a question of time before the system catches up to him. At least I hope it is.
Diana Bhutu, Palestinian human rights attorney, former advisor to the negotiating team of the Palestine Liberation Organization. We'll link to your piece in Zateo, Point Blank Range, How Israel Executed 15 Medics and Rescue Workers in Gaza. When we come back, voices of the mass protests around the world, over a million marched, telling President Trump and billionaire Elon Musk, hands off.
So. Femme du Mali, la femme africaine, femme du monde, je vous salue tous les jours. Femme du Mali, la femme africaine, les femmes du monde, je vous salue tous les jours. Vous travaillez sans relâche. Si vous allez dans les sentiers, vous allez voir des femmes. Si vous allez dans les usines.
Femmes du monde, Women of the World by Amadou and Mariam. In 2018, in our Democracy Now! Studio, the Malian guitarist and singer Amadou Bagayoko died last week at the age of 70. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We look now at the massive protests that erupted Saturday as over a million people took to the streets nationwide to tell President Trump and billionaire Elon Musk hands off, saying no to the Trump administration's dismantling of federal agencies and social programs and its attacks on LGBTQ people, immigrants, education, healthcare, science, free speech and reproductive rights. The coordinated hands-off protests are the largest demonstrations since President Trump returned to office. They took place across all 50 states and across the world. In Europe, thousands gathered in Berlin, Paris and London to respond to Trump's sweeping tariffs, which have shocked the global economy. This is a banker speaking from London.
He's a horrible, small-minded person who is easily maneuvered. And the people who are maneuvering him are very, very, very dangerous. And he's very dangerous, but he's a small-minded and not, frankly, very smart person. So, no, I just hope this is over soon.
Thousands also took to the streets across Canada to protest Trump's repeated threats of making Canada the 51st U.S. state. Demonstrators condemned Trump's remarks as a threat to Canadian sovereignty. This is a Vancouver protester.
Today, I'm out here to send a simple, clear message to the United States that we're not going to want to be a part of you. We're never going to want to be a part of you. This is very close to becoming a reality down there. Right now, we have our very own election, which is extremely scary with what we're seeing as being the unsaid messages from one side. And I'm here as a visual reminder to let people know that we're not going to let this happen. We're not going to sit quietly.
In the United States, there are over 1,200 protests like this one in Los Angeles.
Well, I've marched before when he first got elected a number of years ago, and I still can't believe that he got elected again. And I can't believe that he's tanking the economy and he's tanking the government, and it's all being done for him and for Elon Musk and all the billionaires and everybody else. It's not for me. It's not for the people who live in my neighborhood. It's for all of these billionaires. And I'm glad to see so many people came out today. I mean, we need it. I want more people to show up and get him out of office. It's
terrible.
There
were over 20 protests across the state of Colorado, like this one in Denver in the freezing cold, including former and current workers.
My name's Marina Connors, and this one says, hands off public lands. I'm a retired National Park Service employee, and it's kind of, it's really hard to run the parks, and to do it under these circumstances is even more difficult.
I am a federal employee today, and hope that I can stay that. Hope that I can stay employed so that I can continue to serve the American people who I swore to serve when I took my oath of office.
That federal worker covered her face, but her sign said, with her sign, it said, I want DEI in schools, not measles. Protesters estimated to be in the tens of thousands gathered in Washington, D.C. in mass opposition to Trump's policies. A sea of banners and placards filled the Washington Mall, including signs that read, resist like it's 1938 Nazi Germany and fascism alive and well and living in the White House. Speakers included Congressmembers Ilhan Omar and Jamie Raskin.
They say, though, well, the number of courts striking down Trump's policies is completely unprecedented. Well, so what? That's only because the number of his illegal actions are completely unprecedented. The judges are doing their jobs. They're doing their jobs. Let's tell MAGA what democratic movements all over the world tell the dictators of the world, hands off the courts. Hands off the courts.
Meanwhile, another protest Saturday in D.C. demanded an arms embargo against Israel and an end to the Gaza genocide and the release of Mahmoud Khalil, Rumeysa Ozturk, and other foreign university students and faculty who remain in ICE detention, targeted for their involvement in Palestinian rights protests. This is Mohammed Habe from the American Muslims for Palestine.
I'm here today because for the past year and a half, we have seen the utter destruction going on in Gaza funded by American taxpayer dollars. We've seen it in the previous administration, and we see now that Donald Trump is continuing and making it worse for the people in Gaza. After a month of fasting in the month of Ramadan, we saw that the people in Gaza were suffering a famine, as well as seeing Israel break the ceasefire and begin massacring Palestinians throughout the month and on the day of Eid. I'm here today because I want the people of Gaza to see that the American people will not accept this, that the American people will stand up against our government as they continue to support this genocide.
My name is Eugene Perrier. I'm with the Answer Coalition, and we're demanding the immediate end of the genocide in Gaza. The U.S. should stop all of its forms of complicity and facilitation of that genocide and do everything in its power to bring it to an end immediately. And we're also demanding the release of the students who have been taken off the streets, abducted, and jailed simply for standing with the Palestinian people, and for all those who have been repressed because of the steps they've taken to stand up for the right of self-determination and liberation of Palestine, to have all charges, all lawsuits, or anything like that dropped, and allow people to speak up and speak out against this genocide.
And here in New York City, up to 100,000 people took to the streets in Manhattan, marching from Bryant Park to Madison Square Park. Democracy Now! Was there. There were many issues discussed, among them Rumeysa Öztürk, that tough student who was sent to Louisiana after being driven to Vermont, picked off the streets of Somerville, Massachusetts, by masked agents. A judge has ruled her case has to be sent back to Vermont. These were some of the voices.
I'm not with the group. I went to Tufts University, and that is where Rumeysa Öztürk was disappeared from. And she is owed due process and a chance to continue her education. And she was here legally, and it should never be considered illegal to write an op-ed. Whether you agree or disagree with what she said, it's her right. And I just want her to be free. And I want that for all the people who have been disappeared by the Trump administration.
Is the Tufts community active on Rumeysa's case?
Yes. So I know the president sent out an email the other day. The university is standing with Rumeysa and her lawyers. And also many of my fellow alum have stood up, signed letters, and taken action to free Rumeysa and get justice for her.
Christine Harrington, and I'm with lots of friends, and I'm a professor at NYU, and
what do you teach?
I teach law and politics, so I watched you.
What do you think is happening to the universities?
There are, you know, some of them are caving, and the first ones are caving. Not so good. Not so good at all. But that's why we're out here.
What do you think the universities should do?
Fight back. Make it clear. This is unacceptable. It has never happened, and it will not happen. I mean, to mobilize together. But the caving we saw starting with Columbia and the spread has just made some universities figure duck and cover, you know? We'll get through this. That's not what universities should be about.
My name is Janine Georgette. I can't believe I'm still have to protest this because I can't believe it. I mean, I've been out protesting since I was about 5. It was the first time I remember holding a sign. We are so under attack. Our country is being torn down. I don't really know why. Like, I don't get what they get from tearing our country apart. But they're pulling it down. And so I'm out here to try to keep it upright.
What does the other side say?
Payback is a bitch, and she votes.
A protest like this of tens of thousands of people can make a difference?
You know, I saw it make a difference in the Vietnam War. When so many people get together like this, politicians notice. And so, yes, the protests around the Vietnam War stopped it. There's no doubt in my mind. And so this kind of activism, they notice. They take note.
My sign says, stop the mass kidnappings with no due process. Dictator wannabe and felon Donald Trump. I'm just very upset about him taking these people and sending them to El Salvador without any due process. He says that it's because they are from Tren de Aragua, but he didn't prove this. He didn't give any of these people a chance, an opportunity to say whether they're from that gang or not. That, to me, is just BS. He's even defying the judge's orders, even during appeal. That is just BS, and we can't stand for that.
I'm a probationary worker at the NIH. I'm a staff scientist.
All probationary workers weren't fired?
All probation, no, they weren't fired. But a good 40% or so were fired, so I don't know the exact number.
And what does your sign say?
We just need to fund science and stop the cuts and stop funding billionaires and stop going for their actual purposes. We want to, you know, really re-educate the population. We need more funding in science. You know, new epidemics are going to start coming out unless we actually start putting more investment in research and more investment in public health.
I'm Rabbi Bara Ellman. I'm out here because we're on the break. We have to stand up against this encroaching authoritarianism and fascism. And I'm definitely scared for democracy. And we have to be in the streets, not just this week, but every week.
How do you feel about President Trump going after universities in the name of combating anti-Semitism?
I am so distressed and angry about that. His weaponization of anti-Semitism is going to make Jews, is going to be dangerous for Jews, but also it's such a cynical use of this idea, which from his cabinet, which has so many people whose anti-Semitism is widely demonstrated, for him to then try to claim that he's arguing on our behalf. And it's also so completely, blatantly false. You know, to someone protesting the war in Gaza is not endangering myself as a Jew. And frankly, I also think the whole portrayal of the safety issue on campuses for Jews has been widely represented, and failing to talk about, you know, the safety of Muslims and Palestinians on campus. So I'm a rabbi, and I'm a very active Jew, and frankly, his weaponization of this, of anti-Semitism, I find grotesque and scary and wrong.
My name is Isaac. I made this sign to say 1825. It's because everything that we have made, 200 years of progress since 1864, is being taken away. They already went after women's rights. They already went after Latino rights. They ain't gonna stop until they come after everybody, until we get thrown back to 19th century America again. Need I say more?
What's your name? What's your sign, and why are you here?
My name is Susan. I'm here because this man is not fit to be president. President doesn't tell people to digest bleach and die in parking lots instead of getting health care, instead of getting lunch, instead of defending our allies in Europe, defending democracy in the world.
What does your sign say?
My sign says no more tariffs, no kings, and no third terms. This is not how our president behaves.
Voices from the hands-off protest in New York City. Estimates are up to 100,000 people marched on Saturday in the rain, some of the million who marched around the globe. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, we look at the impact of Trump's tariffs on heavily indebted countries in the global south. Back in 20 seconds.
So. Can I give a full safu, yeah, 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 yeah.
Fusafu by Amadou and Mariam in our 2018 interview at Democracy Now! Studios. Malinga Torres and singer Amadou Bagayoko died last week at the age of 70. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Global stocks are continuing to fall. Fears of recession are growing after President Trump rejected calls to scale back his order to institute sweeping tariffs on most of the world. And Hong Kong stocks fell today by 13%, biggest single-day drop since 1997 Asian financial crisis. Taiwan's main stock index had its worst day since 1990. On Wall Street, $6.6 trillion was wiped out on Thursday and Friday. Trump's defending his tariff plan, telling reporters, quote, sometimes you have to take medicine to fix something, unquote. But there appears to be growing divisions within the Trump administration over the tariffs plan. Trump's billionaire advisor, Elon Musk, the world's richest man, says he wants to see the U.S. and Europe have zero tariffs. Musk has also publicly criticized Trump trade advisor Peter Navarro. Another billionaire Trump backer, Bill Ackman, was warning that Trump's tariffs could lead to an economic nuclear winter. For more on the impact of these tariffs, especially on the poorest countries of the world, we're joined by Jayati Ghosh, economics professor at University of Massachusetts Amherst. She was previously an economics professor at Jawaharlal Nehru University in New Delhi, India, where she taught for 35 years. She's joining us now from Delhi, from India. Professor, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you lay out what is the effect of the tariffs as you see them on the poorest countries of the world?
Well, I think what's really striking about this whole tariff policy is not just the sheer stupidity of it, which I think you've already highlighted, the impact that is taking place in the rich countries, but the fact, the wanton cruelty of it. Because the formula that's used is bizarre. It has nothing to do with the actual kind of protection that these countries afford themselves. But many of them are really the poorest, most debt-stressed, most climate-impacted countries in the world. And to actually attack them in this completely unnecessary way is quite unbelievable. In my own region in South Asia, we have Sri Lanka. I've just come back from Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, Pakistan, which are facing very, very high tariff rates. They are all struggling with massive debt burdens. They can barely generate enough foreign exchange to import the most essential items. They, on top of that, have to pay very, very heavy debt service, and they've not really managed significant restructuring. All of them are under IMF programs. And yet you get then this completely unnecessary, wanton kind of attack on a little bit of foreign exchange that they're generating. Because the U.S. is a major market for all of them.
So you have what some are calling Trump's shock and awe trade policy, the imposition of punitive tariffs on developing countries where you are across Asia, like 49% on Cambodia, 37% on Bangladesh, 48% for Laos. What exactly does this mean on their end in these countries and what it means for people in the United States when those tariffs are imposed?
Well, let's take Bangladesh, Laos, Cambodia, Sri Lanka. They are dominantly garment exporters. Now, this is a sort of labor-intensive activity that typically developing countries take up at the early stage of their development. It's not going to shift to the U.S., and in fact, the U.S. doesn't want those jobs. So the whole idea that you will somehow attack these countries for just a little bit of very labor-intensive export that they must generate, because they're all facing very severe crises of the other kinds that I mentioned, is really strange. Now, garments are not just a significant export and source of foreign exchange, but they are major employers, and particularly of women. So what we're going to see now are significant layoffs. We've already seen people in Sri Lanka and companies in Bangladesh complaining that orders have stopped already, even before the tariffs actually come into effect, and that they're going to actually have to lay off hundreds of thousands of workers, in some cases, possibly millions of workers. And what that will do to economies that are already reeling under severe crisis. In Bangladesh, you've already had political upheaval. In Sri Lanka, you have a new government after significant political upheaval. What that will do to all of these countries is actually quite terrifying.
Why do you think President Trump is imposing these, given this isn't a situation where it hurts other countries, but it really benefits the United States? I mean, he wasn't explaining this weekend. He was out golfing.
Well, I mean, it's because there is no explanation. We now know what the formula is. It's this completely ridiculous formula. The trade deficit the U.S. has with that country divided by the U.S. imports from that country divided by half. That's nothing, right? So the maximum you could possibly impose is 50%. Some countries have got close to that, 48, 49%, like Cambodia, like Vietnam, which is ridiculous because these are tiny, tiny amounts. For the U.S., it's not even a drop in the ocean of their imports. But because they have simply applied this across the board for all countries, somebody said that basically they obviously just asked ChatGPT or something to work this out without thinking about the context or even what they want strategically from this. Because they just applied this across the board, all kinds of countries in Africa, in Latin America, in Asia are going to be suffering hugely. And that chaos is going to come even to countries that are not directly affected by very high tariffs. So even countries that are facing, let's say, only 10% tariff, like Nepal, or other countries that have got away with slightly lower rates, 20%, 25%, and still high, but lower, are still going to actually face the fallout of this because there is likely to be a global recession. There is already so much uncertainty that people are canceling orders, companies are reducing investment plans. We've seen what's happened to the stock market. We've seen what's happened to oil price. These are all indicators that there is likely to be a dramatic global slowdown and recession. Now, that affects everybody. That affects even countries that didn't get a major tariff hit. And so all countries in the world, and particularly, as I mentioned, the poorest countries who have a lot of difficulty generating dollars, are going to actually face a really major shock, which is completely man-made and unnecessary.
And can you talk about how this will impact workers, people around the world who work for U.S. companies?
Oh, absolutely. It's not just the U.S. companies. It's the companies that U.S. companies, you know, there are these value chains. So all of the major garment producers, for example, are multinationals who outsource to local companies. All of them are being hit. But it's not just that. It's going to affect the supply chains in electronics. It's going to affect the supply chains in a lot of the new machinery that is essential for, let's say, the cars that Elon Musk wants to build and so on. So, in fact, this is also going to come back to bite the United States.
And the U.S. ultimately putting tariffs on China of over 50% and then China retaliating with over 30% tariffs in this last minute.
I think what's really significant about the Chinese response is not just the tariff response, but the fact that they have put export bans on some critical raw materials of which they are currently the only global producer. And that's going to affect all kinds of production, all of the new high technology production that the U.S. wants to encourage and where it feels that it wants to gain a technological advantage over China simply won't happen. Everything from EVs to solar panels to you name it. Defense equipment, etc., all of this is going to be affected. So it's been a remarkably stupid strategic move by Trump.
Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say that there's a silver lining in this for developing countries, which is that for too long, for maybe three decades, we've been told that the only way we can develop is through export-led growth. And that's really, it's been unfortunate because we have never seen giving our own workers a fair deal as a good option. We've always seen wages as a cost, not as a source of our own domestic demand and market. It's now time to actually change, to shift gears, to think about different trading arrangements, more regional arrangements, looking at other developing countries as markets, looking at our own population as markets, and thinking about the things we can do to create sustainable production that's not ecologically damaging, that actually provides living wages and decent working conditions within our own countries.
We have to leave it there. Thank you so much. University of Massachusetts Amherst Professor Jayati Ghosh, speaking to us from New Delhi. I'm Amy Goodman.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
This is Mac DeMarco, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby, the Chablis.